Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown Podcast. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the Managing Editor for Dentwire Municipals. Joining me today are two of our reporters, Simone Barabo and Sophia Clark. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, the title of today's podcast episode is University-Based Retirement Communities. Simone, that sounds like a little bit of an oxymoron. What exactly are these communities and how common are they?
University-based retirement communities are a relatively new phenomenon. According to seniorliving.org, there are at least 100 of these that have sprung up since 2009. Of that 100, a lot are near college campuses or have agreements to use campus facilities. The Forest at Duke, which is one of the ones Senior Living mentions, is near Duke University, but other than proximity, its website doesn't mention any kind of tie it has with the school. Longhorn Village near the University of Texas has a relationship with the Alumni Association, so there are opportunities for using campus facilities and extended education programs. When you take away the universities that have agreements with nearby senior living facilities where seniors can audit classes or use amenities or whatever, and then look at continuing care retirement communities or CCRCs that are on college campuses, you have a much, much smaller universe. And those aren't run by the university. Those are ground leases by CCRCs. Those are also much newer, opening in the last couple of years. And when I say ground leases by CCRCs, I mean the university just leases a bit of its actual ground to the CCRC. The CCRC makes lease payments and gets to house its community on the university property. So to give a few examples, there's Mirabella at ASU, Arizona State University, which is a 20-story building on ASU's campus. ASU offers lots of benefits for people living at the CCRC, and the school just leased out a couple of acres of land on its main campus for 99 years. There's Spires at Berry College, which, again, is the Georgia college leasing land to the CCRC for 99 years. There's also Broadview Senior Living at Purchase College. That's one of the State University of New York colleges, or SUNY colleges, and that one's set to open this fall. Like Mirabella and Spires, that's a lease. And actually, just to show how long it can take between design and implementation, New York's legislator passed legislation that allowed the lease more than a decade ago, and it's only going to open in the next few months.
So the ones that are on campus, could you describe one, Sophia? What is occupancy like and how does it function?
So for instance, the Purchase College example, it already has a 90% reservation rate for the 220 units being constructed. And one of Broadview's features is a 10,000-foot common building for residents, students, and faculties to interact with each other.
And just to clarify, these are true CCRCs, which typically include a continuum of care, independent living, assisted living, nursing homes, rather than just senior communities of people 55 or 62 and up.
Yes, most of them tend to run the gamut.
So this sounds like you might be combining the risk of student housing with the risk of CCRCs. Maybe we should back up. What's going on with student housing?
Well, there's a housing crisis going on everywhere, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and unfortunately, college campuses are no exception. Enrollment has been exceeding on-campus housing capacity for the past 10 years or so, and the cost of campus housing has increased similar to how rents have.
So colleges and universities must be building more dorms, right?
Some are. Like the University of Tennessee recently entered into a public-private partnership, or P3 agreement, with Rise Real Estate for campus housing for about 1,200 freshmen and sophomores. And actually, a lack of housing has prevented the school from admitting more students in the past. And the College of New Jersey and the University of Delaware were also recently looking for development partners to replace some of their dorms on their respective campuses. And both of those would likely involve P3s as well. And Eastern Michigan University has gotten a little further with its campus housing update plan. And their three P3 partners tasked with issuing a $200 million long-term fixed rate bond for the project. And that's supposed to be ready by 2025.
So how does that structure in regards to P3s work?
So in this case, a university and a developer would enter into an agreement where the tenant develops the land during the lease period while paying rent to the university. And then at the end of the lease, the land and its improvements are returned to the school. And there's two types of ground leases. Subordinated, meaning the landowner becomes a partner in the development by helping the developer secure financing. And unsubordinated, which means the landowner doesn't help with financing. but subordination is typically required by lenders as a condition of the loan approval. So the university risks losing the property with no compensation, and the developers risk never having their projects approved and still having to make monthly payments on the long lease, sometimes as long as 99 years, like Simone mentioned before. But every situation is different, and this isn't always the case. And a lot of the time when we talk about P3s, we're not talking about it in the traditional sense of the private sector providing all the financing through the corporate market, but rather talking about a developer issuing municipal debt.
So is student housing exclusively P3s, or do universities own any of their own housing?
It's also common for universities to issue bonds themselves, backed by either just the revenues from student rents or some broader revenue stream. Yale owns at least some of their dorms, and so do Quinnipiac and University of Pittsburgh. And a lot of them also own student housing properties off campus too, like Sacred Heart in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
So Sophie, you've painted a sunny picture of student housing. Is it a safe muni investment, or are there risks too?
Well, there's risks with everything. I'm sure everyone thought it was a safe investment before COVID hit, but then people were probably nervous that students would never return to campus dorms. But at this point, with residence halls filling back up and overflowing, I'd say they're a safe muni investment. But actually, the operator of a University of Florida residence complex went bankrupt 3 years ago, shortly after COVID started. And that was about 16 months after selling $78 million in municipal bonds to finance the complex.
All right, Simone, let's move over to CCRCs. Is this a similar story? Plenty of demand, relative safety?
It is the opposite story. They have a high default rate. Bloomberg put the rate at 7% compared to just a sliver of 1% for the muni market overall. And that's because they've sort of been stuck with the worst of all worlds. You have a pandemic hit, and now a lot of people really don't want to move into CCRCs. They prefer to stay living in their homes or with their children. And long-term care insurance is making it easier for some portion of the population to do that. You also have a shortage of medical staff, nurses, and others who work in assisted living and nursing homes that are often part of CCRCs. Many CCRCs are also having trouble hiring dining staff because those are low-paying jobs and there's competition for low-wage workers. You also have inflation costs for supplies, including medical supplies. In some cases, you have these big leaps in the price of insurance because of weather-related events or for whatever reason. You also have some stickiness in terms of prices to the extent that any services are paid with Medicaid or Medicare or even with private insurance. In some cases, you're seeing CCRCs with entrance fee issues. They're full, which is great, but that also means they're not getting an influx of entrance fees. Or early on, they agreed to refund 100% of entrance fees rather than the 90% that's currently typical. And those early resident deposits now have to be returned. So even when those units are filled, the entrance fees don't really generate any new cash. So there's a lot of stress overall, and you get some extreme cases. The Amsterdam at Harborside, a CCRC up in New York, that has filed for Chapter 11 three times in a decade.
Interesting. A Chapter 33.
Yeah, exactly. And Clear Oaks, an Illinois CCRC, which has filed for Chapter 11 only twice before, recently missed a payment. So maybe that's another one in the works. And interestingly, the Edgemere, a Dallas CCRC that recently emerged from bankruptcy, is now allowing people in the CCRC to rent spaces rather than pay large entrance fees. So that opens up a whole other set of problems.
Well, sounds like definitely we have another podcast in the making with CCRC specifically. But back to these university-based retirement communities.
Yes, that's for another day. But Sophia mentioned the University of Florida's student housing project that filed for bankruptcy earlier. UF also has an affiliated CCRC called Oak Hammock at the University of Florida. And this is, albeit one of the much more common off-campus ones. And I quickly checked out its financials. It had swung to an operating gain in the first quarter from a loss a year earlier. But UF seems skittish, even though all it seems to be doing is offering enrichment opportunities for residents. At the bottom of its website, it says, and this is in all capital letters, "The University of Florida is not responsible for the financial or contractual obligations of Oak Hammock at the University of Florida Incorporated." So it seems like they may have taken something from that student housing fiasco and are trying to be very clear that it does not apply to the CCRC.
They just wanted to make sure there was no doubt that they don't have any responsibility. So, okay.
Exactly. Our name may be on the CCRC, but our pocketbook is not. So putting this all together, there don't seem to be many on-campus CCRCs out there, even though there are plenty of affiliates.
Now, is this something we can expect to see more of, though?
So speaking from the perspective of a CCRC, you can see why they'd want this. You'd be building in a place where you've got a bunch of built-in amenities. You don't have to build a pool. You don't have to build a library, a theater. It's all right there. To the extent that a university has a medical center, it's possible there'd be some synergies there, too. You have to pay universities to lease the land, and so price would matter, but you'd be buying or leasing land anyway. And if you fail, you fail, and whatever remedies you'd have in or out of bankruptcy to deal with payments to the university, those would be accessible to you. Now, there's a question for residents. Do they want to be on a university campus? In an extreme case, they'd open themselves up to dealing with university shenanigans. You could get, I guess, a Revenge of the Nerd-style rivalry between the CCRC residents and the Alpha Betas or whoever. In a more realistic scenario, spending a good deal of your free time on campus with a bunch of teenagers and early 20-somethings might not be for everyone. I, for instance, got told off by a retiree when I brought my kid to the University of Miami pool during water aerobics time. So the dominance of young people on campuses may be a double-edged sword for some. But really, from the CCRC's perspective, it could provide access to just a sheer number of amenities that would be unrealistic to build for just a few hundred people.
So I definitely can see why CCRCs would be interested in this approach. It's not as clear to me what the benefits are from the university's perspective.
So like Simone said, I can see why both the schools and the CCRCs would want this, but I can't think of too many older people that would want to live on a college campus. I graduated 2 years ago and would much rather live where I do now than on campus again. But my university did have a portion of on-campus housing that was secluded from other residence halls where some faculty lived with their families and pets, but we never saw them or anything. So I think something on campus but secluded would be best for both. Part of the draw for UBRCs is that retirees and students can interact with each other and provide support in different ways. Like a college student may be visiting an elderly person that can't leave bed, or maybe a retiree acts as a mentor or parental figure to a college kid. Retirees can also access classes, libraries, seminars, campus events, and all that good stuff that a lot of traditional CCRCs don't offer, or at least not to that extent. A lot of universities are running out of space to house their students. And when Simone and I were talking before the podcast, we were just trading stories about how our schools didn't have enough housing. Some kids live on campus just for the experience. So my school, who we cover, but I won't mention them, they made kids commute to campus freshman year if their mailing address was within 10 miles of the school because they didn't have enough freshman dorms for everyone. But both groups, students and retirees, are looking to fill up the facility. But I would say students are just a hair more likely to do so.
And what about comparing it to cases where the university owns the CCRC?
The university runs a greater risk if they own the CCRC themselves because it might not fill up with residents and they'd be out the money or they'd have to repurpose it for students. Though I'd like to think a CCRC home is better than a campus dorm home. The students and retirees may not mesh well either. I think campus retirement communities benefit the operators of the CCRC and the residents more than it benefits a university. The operators aren't paying to install the amenities like Simone said. So really the only thing they need is the actual building to house the seniors. The universities are often being paid handsomely for allowing the use of their amenities.
So it sounds like it could be a win-win for both parties. What about from a private developer's perspective?
Well, a student housing developer would be different from a CCRC developer, but a developer would probably be more likely to want to develop a CCRC. Although I think this can be impacted by the area you're in, like in the Northeast where you have a lot of college graduates, you'll probably have more seniors wanting to live on campuses so they can stay sharp and access the academic side of things. There's always going to be retirees needing care, but there may not always be overflowing campus dorms. Undergrad enrollment dropped 8% between 2019 and 2022, and a lot of the ground leases we mentioned before can be years and years long. So if enrollment can change that much in just 3 years, it can certainly change much more in the future.
Let me get to the favorite part of the podcast for me. I want to hear the predictions from both Simone and Sophia on where do you see this going?
I think to the extent that you can get universities to agree, you'll see CCRCs trying to open facilities on campus. I'm not quite in the going to a CCRC camp yet, but I live near a university and it's really nice having it nearby. My daughter is in summer camp there at the art museum. I can walk to the art museum. I can walk to the pool. There's a food court. It's a really nice thing to have in a walkable distance. And I imagine it'd be a draw even in a few decades.
I think we'll see more of this. It's not for everyone, but as I mentioned before about the secluded faculty housing on my campus, I think it would be a good middle ground for both sides. Plus, students are in class most of the day, and campus is mostly empty in the summer, so the amenities that usually go unused during the summertime can now serve a purpose. Universities also tend to have more staff around during the academic year, but maybe those people could stick around full-time over the summer, too, if there was a CCRC operating there.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what universities and CCRCs agree on. It should be interesting to see how that develops. So thanks, Sophia and Simone, for your contributions to this week's podcast. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and or subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tune in next Thursday for the latest drop of the Muni Lowdown. Take care.